The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Good morning. Just a little bit about my background. I've been in Elmbrook since 1967. Taught in the middle school for 37 years. I don't know how I lasted, but I kind of love that age group where anything can happen.
So how old were you when you started?
21. 21 when I started. Coached boys and girls basketball, summer school administrator for about 16 years, and currently I am on the Wauwatosa School Board and serving in senior ministries here at Elmbrook, as well as leading a couple life groups. So I came upon this journey because my mother died about 7 or 8 years ago. And so what you're going to experience from what I'm going to share with you is the things that I have gone through. In no way am I an expert, but these are the things that I have dealt with and felt and related to. And I do want to leave time at the end of this session for any kind of questions that might come up, which might benefit all of us. So when we think about aging has a new format. The age of 70 might be the what used to be 60. The age of 80 might be what used to be 70. I know I play golf with a guy that's 85 years old, and he still beats me. There is he shoots his age. Sometimes he shoots better than his age. And he's in perfect health at 85. You know people, and I know people that are 85 and that are not in perfect. In fact, some of you are sitting here as caregivers, as I am, and there is struggles, even beginning before 85. Somebody says, well, how do you know somebody's really, really aging? Is it a number or is it somebody else? Somebody once said, well, they were on an airline flight, and the guy knew he was aging when they said coffee, tea, soda, or milk of magnesia, which, you know, he was more than willing to raise a hand. Some people age if they sit in a rocking chair, and when they're sitting in the rocking chair, they can't get it to move, and it's not a rocking chair anymore. Or they say to people, you know, I know I'm aging because everything hurts, and what doesn't hurt doesn't work. And so there's this whole concept of, well, how do you know somebody's really aging? And it really is a different number for an individual and a different number related to individual stories. Relating to statistics, which I'm sometimes into, by the year 2020, it's estimated that there will be over 72 million people 65 and older. And the largest group of that aging population will be 85 and older. That's a significant growth group. These are some feelings that people go through as they're aging. One of the feelings is uselessness, such as, I'm over the hill, I just get in the way of people doing their job. Another feeling might be guilt. If only I had a second chance and had done something different, especially when it comes to relationships. Another feeling could be self-pity, which is, nobody cares if I'm living or dead, and what should it matter anyway? And it's all this thing of, woe is me, I'm aging, it's my time on earth is ending, etc. Then there are fears. These are real fears for them. Economic fears, like, what's going to happen? I'm going to run out of money. Or fear of health and mind. I think I don't remember things the way I used to remember things. My health is failing, my heart, etc. It's all related. And then there are people that are going through things and just have this peace of contentment, of it is what it is. And sometimes you'll be dealing with people and they go through all of these different fears or all of these different feelings, and the best thing you can do is listen. Because there's a lot of times there's no one there to listen. So very briefly, here's the story of what happened with my mother 7 or 8 years ago, which took me on this journey. My mother was in the epitome of health. She was the healthy one. My dad was the one that had all of health issues. So they were both near 80. And my mother went in for a simple, I say simple, it wasn't simple, but she had a simple procedure which would put stents to open up a couple of her arteries. That's it. It's very common. It was common back 7 or 8 years. It's common now. Well, within 24 hours, she developed this fever. They released her from the hospital, despite my concern. How can you, you know, she just had this procedure. How can you release her? Oh, the fever will go away. If it doesn't go away within 24 hours, please call us back and we'll deal with this. Within 12 hours of being released to the hospital, she had a massive heart attack and she was dead. She died in her home. At the same time that she was undergoing this, my dad was on a treadmill having a stress test because he was the one that was experiencing chest pains, etc. But God, it's in God's timing. We can't decide when we're going to leave this planet and go into the next realm. So when my mother passed away, my dad was faced with all of these health issues, plus a partner that was not there anymore. And his partner, my mother, did everything. And that brought me more as their son into the picture. Now, what I want you to think about, and some of you have the handout. If you don't have a handout, I'll get you one. But the handout basically has to do with care. In fact, we could say caring for people that are aging. So when we care, when I care for people that are aging, I look at four things. There are four things, and all of these care run with us. First, you assess the situation, which means what is really going on here factually. Not emotionally, not, oh, you know, but state of the facts. Then you come up with some sort of plan. It might be you individually. It might be a group of family members. It might be whoever is involved with this individual. Then what we have done is we spend some time in prayer. You actually pray through this plan, or you could pray before, but, you know, it's intermixed. And then you actually have to act on it. See, there's a lot of people that they assess it, they come up with a plan, they're praying about it, but then there's no action. And so the condition of the person you're caring for is the same 1 month ago as it is 6 months down the road because no one's willing to act on it. So I urge you, as you're going through these different steps, or you want choose to get involved, or you are involved, to think about those four things. The first thing that came upon was care at home. 9 out of 10 people, if you do a survey, almost 90% prefer to stay in their home. In fact, over 80% still own their home when things like this come up. So what does it look like if a person is aging and wants to stay in their home, as my dad did? No way am I going to leave this home. I've been here for 40-some years. I don't care what it takes. You make this work for me. So what happens as the person is aging? Their eyesight is diminished, right? You have to evaluate. Can they drive? Can they not drive? With my dad, I said if you want to continue driving, and he's almost 90, you need to get approval from your heart doctor and from your neurologist and from your eye doctor. If those three people sign off and they say, oh, you can still do this, okay, I'm good to go, which he did. Prior to that, he wasn't driving a car. You decide. You decide as a caregiver or whatever else what kind of skills they still have, and they will be diminishing, and that's one of the biggest threats is to take their independence away. They don't like it, and I can understand why. But I had to have my dad prove to me that he could still drive. So what else is going on in the house? Well, their eyesight is diminished. They need to have more lights on during the day. You have to be very concerned about the rails. My dad has neuropathy, has a hard time walking. So how do they get from one spot to the other house to another? Before, you just walk in a straight line. Well, now the straight line might be bouncing off walls to get where they want to get. 2 weeks or 2 months ago, my dad was just getting me up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, which he had done, you know. That's obviously what happens as we get older. We get up in the middle. I'm sure some of you would say, yeah, that happens to me, etc. So he had to get up in the middle of the night. We keep a little nightline on for him. But he lost his balance. Now he's in the bathroom, and the only thing that's there is the towel bar, which he's grabbing. So he grabs the towel bar. Well, what do you think is going to happen to the towel bar? It's coming out. And as it comes out, he is falling into the tub. So at 90 years old, he's got the towel bar, and he falls in the tub, and miraculously, he doesn't injure himself. He falls just perfectly, so He's got the towel bar, the shower curtain, etc., and it all just sort of tumbled mass into the tub. But all of those thoughts as far as lighting and rails and wheelchair accessible are all important if someone is to remain inside their house. So what do we do if somebody remains inside their house? My mother made all the meals. We came up with a meal plan. We decided, okay, who could actually be involved as family members and friends? Who could actually sit down and have a meal with my dad? And we set up a monthly plan where people would come in or he could leave and have meals, fellowship with other people. And so he could look at his calendar and there was there. I'm going to have a meal with this person. I'm going to go out to lunch with this person. Because this is something my mother had done all the time previously. We also looked at the idea of Meals on Wheels and other and volunteers to come in. One of the major things we thought about if my dad is living alone was something called a lifeline. How many have ever heard of a lifeline? Lifeline is something you wear on your wrist or like this, and it's hooked up to your phone. That's one of the reasons they should maintain a landline. One, if not the only reason, probably, to maintain a landline in the house. And if something has happened, they can just press this, and there will be a voice in the other end. They'll say, George, are you okay? If they don't answer it, you'll get the fire department, you'll get the police department, you get the parents. They all show up, but it's better. It's a definite safety net for those people that are in the house, lifeline. And I guess we pay about $30 a month, and it's, you know, ongoing, so forth. The other thing you do is we sort of kept a record because my mother used to do all the cleaning and everything. Who's cleaning the house? Who's keeping track of it, etc.? So this whole idea of keeping the maintenance of the house inside and out was extremely important. Currently, I'm helping a guy across the street. He's 92. He wants to stay in his house. He's got a son and three grandsons, but he said, hey, if I ask them to do things, it's like you five putting on a green. It's like, you know, it's not going to happen. So if you could help me out here, I just need my lawn cut and when it snows, a little bit of salt and so forth. And we have great conversations. But his, he can't move much, but he loves to look out in his yard. He loves to see his birds. He loves to keep the status quo. And he's aging, as I would say, gracefully, because there's people in the neighborhood, like myself, that are able to help him. So those things about keeping track of care at home are very important. The other thing I want to mention, which is very important with keeping care at home, is the phone situation. And here's what's called. This is called predators at home. The aged people, and it could be you and I, are definitely preyed upon on the telephone and on the internet. Last year alone, there were 13, I'm going to say this, $13 billion that the aged people had to absorb because of fraud, etc. And it starts out with the silent phone call. Now, I don't know how many of you are dealing with senior parents or aging parents or neighbor, whatever else, but one of the best things you can get is that a caller ID. And I tell my dad this, if you don't recognize the number, any kind of recognition with the number, family members, friends, etc., where the name comes up, you hang up. Because what happens with the silent phone call is a lot of people, because they love, they just pick it up. Hello, hello, hello. And while you're saying the hello, 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 and nobody's really answering on the end, they're gaining your number. They're gaining information about that call from you as you're picking up. Hey, this person will always pick up the phone. Then that phone number is sold to different groups, meaning that these different groups can prey upon that individual that picked up hello, hello, hello. So one of the major groups that picks up is Microsoft. How many have ever heard of the Microsoft scam? Here's the Microsoft scam. It's probably the number one as far as senior. It was preyed upon. 3.3 million people had the Microsoft, and my brother-in-law was one of them, had the Microsoft scam. And it involved a cost of $1.5 billion last year. So here's what they do. They call up, and they say, there's something wrong with your computer. We're here to help it fix it, and we just need you to go to this little site. And you click it, so the people go to a little site because they say, hey, I use my computer all the time. So a person from Microsoft is calling. I got to do what they tell me. So they tell you to go what looks like an official Microsoft site, and they click on it. And when the people click on it, malware goes throughout the whole computer and picks up passwords and everything else. And here's what happened to my brother-in-law. He did it because he had just bought this new computer. Microsoft called him, and they had total control of his computer. Total control of the computer. So he had to redo his bank accounts, et cetera, because they were in charge and they knew they had gotten the passwords. And older people are very, very vulnerable because they want things to work. Another scam with the phone, IRS. This is probably the number one complaint with senior citizens, the IRS. The IRS calls or even shows up there at their door and says, by the way, you owe back taxes. And if you don't pay these back taxes, there's going to be this huge interest, 20%. So we're here to help you process what you owe. And they already have your last four digits of your Social Security number. They say, well, isn't the last four digits of your Social Security? And didn't you pay tax? They have all of this information. The best thing to do, again, is not answer it because the IRS will only contact people through the Postal Service. A lot of people don't know this, but they still use the slow snail mail. Postal Service. And by the way, if you give them the number and you call the number, the IRS takes forever to answer the phone. And if you call this number, the scam number, they pick up like this because they want your money. So be very conscious of helping these older people and friends or relatives to realize that this phone needs to have an ID and don't give out unnecessary information. Second thing is caregivers. A lot of people can get their family involved. Some of you are doing this individually. I started out doing it individually. Now my sister, because of my dad's situation, is living with my dad, so things are better with caregivers. But some people, because they can't do it individually, hire caregivers outsourced, such as Comfort Keepers, such as Rent a Daughter. I'm just giving you two. You can go on the internet. I urge you, if you need the caregivers and the people want to stay in their own home, to interview these people, to get an idea what it's going to cost, what they're going to do, see if there's a comfort level. Now, for myself and my family, like a lot of you that are maybe caring for your older people or are thinking about this, there are 40 million people in America, friends and relatives and neighbors that are caring for a senior citizen, 40 million. And they're putting in like 37 billion hours. Think of that, 37 billion hours. And if you actually cost them out, it's like $500 billion. In other words, if they were actually paid for this service, it's like $500 billion. That's what they're doing every year. So it's not abnormal for family members and friends to help these people get supported and get care. But if you're interested in the caregivers, I urge you, as we had done, to interview them and then to actually try them out. And if it's not a match with whoever you're helping out, then the person, like my dad, would tell me, this is not working out. So honesty is really, really, really important with this caregiver and the trust factor. Cost. What does it cost to have these caregivers come in? Well, there's an organization that if you do them 24/7, it'll cost you $250 a day. $250 a day. Well, you're going to go through some funds at $250 a day. There are other organizations where, let's say you only need them for 4 hours. I want them there from 6 to do the supper to when they're in bed. They're going to charge you anywhere probably from $20 to $25 an hour. And maybe that's a great peace of mind. But these services are not for nothing. And sometimes, you know, if you can get it for less, you get what you pay for. I'm just going to say that. You know, sometimes we've gone for less than the $20 or look for. Sometimes you get what you pay for. The whole idea is the individual that walks in the door and the trust and the relationship that they have with who they're caring for. Third idea is medical care. I found out that you need a list of all the doctors and appointment. My dad had 6 different doctors. Well, I had no idea. He would say, well, I need to go to this doctor. I need to go to this doctor. I had to come up with a list of all the doctors. And the most important thing with medical care, you've got to have a quarterback that knows what the heck is going on with each of the doctors. Somebody like an internist that, okay, know that this is a heart specialist, the skin doctor, the urologist, because as they age, there's all these different specialists that gets involved. But somebody has to be aware of coordinating all this. And usually it's the internist, but also in the family, it's called power of health attorney. You need somebody, if somebody is getting incapacitated, that is able to make health care decisions. So what happens if my dad would have another stroke? Well, my sister and I have health care power of attorney. We are able to make some choices related to his health that if he didn't have it, it's not going to happen the same way that we had discussed it before. So if you want a discussion about a medication, if you want a discussion about that, you need to have this healthcare power of attorney in place. It makes things go a lot smoother. Many of you are aware of Medicare, right? So Medicare A has to do with what? Hospitalizations. That's important because Medicare A pays for the hospitalizations. Medicare B pays for the doctor visits, and that's important to know. Medicare D pays for their prescriptions, and that's important. So you got those three, right? And then you have something complicated overriding this whole, it's called supplemental insurance. Anybody know what that's, supplemental? So Medicare pays for about 80% of the stuff, of the bills. And most senior citizens, whatever, have a supplement, whether it's United Healthcare, you know what I'm talking about. And that fills in the gaps. So they pay monthly fee, which you need to be aware of, to that supplemental insurance. So these healthcare providers, like myself and some of you, sometimes provide up to 60% of what's going on related to medical issues, whether it's changing something, changing an ointment, checking, whatever. 60% of the stuff is now done by caregivers, which used to not happening. So some of you know what's happening in the hospital. In 1980, the average stay in the hospital was 7.3 days. Do you know what's happened in the year 2016 to the stay in the hospital? It's shortened. They want those people out. Oh, you can walk around the hall, you're out. You can get out of bed, you're out. But here's what Medicare has done. Medicare has said to the insurance companies, look, if these people come back within 30 days, you're going to pay for it, or you're going to pay a good portion of this. So if they come back in the hospital, do the same related procedure, Medicare is telling these insurance companies and telling these hospitals, you're going to become more accountable. Because what they've been finding out is this getting these people out of the hospitals early wasn't always beneficial. Sometimes people weren't ready to leave the hospital, like my mother. She shouldn't have left with a fever of 100, 101. You know, it shouldn't have happened. So Medicare is more aware that they will follow through if you have to bring the person back in the hospital. Legal care. Legal care is a very important concept, especially when it comes to finding the right person to support you in this endeavor of their estate. So what do you mean by the estate? Well, they have funds. They have property. They, you know, a lot of people have this. So I found it very important to get an estate lawyer. Somebody that was not going to bilk me, and this is why I gave him a call or I interview him and said, what are you going to charge for this? So you should be able to get a charge up front. Somebody that, if they don't have this, and my dad had this, we put this in place, it's called a living trust. And the trust, pretty much, I'm going to say this to you, pretty much protects their assets. If they don't have this living trust, it's different than the will. The will sort of says, okay, this is what's going to happen to me. This is what I want for my health. But I'm urging you, those of you who are not or are involved in this, to ask your parent, whatever else, whoever you're, especially if they have high-end monetary. You know, if they're struggling financially, whatever else, the living trust is not, it's not an issue. But the ballpark figure I'm just going to give you to is it could be like $500,000, it could be $400,000. So if you take $400,000 to $600,000, in that ballpark, they should have, at least I've been told, they should have what's called a living trust. And within that living trust, there's a specificity of what is to happen to all of their funds. And those funds will not go to probate. They are dispersed after the death of whoever is named on the trust. There's also something called a power of attorney, which I am, and I should have said this before, but this is extremely important. When the individual that you are taking care of, whether it's a parent, an aunt, an uncle, whatever else, they die, It's very important if you are the designated whatever power attorney, get what we would say are called DEF certificates. These are extremely important because wherever you go to draw out funds or to try to make some sense, even like funeral arrangements, whatever, they'll say, can I see the death certificate? So you want to collect something on insurance? Can I see the death certificate? You want to do something related? Can I see the death certificate? And so one of the things that whoever you're caring for, and this is what I urge, especially if there's a relationship, if you're the son, the daughter, or no, no daughter here, but anyway, if you're the son or you're caring for your aunt or you're caring for your dad, your mother, whoever it might be, make sure they have a power of attorney. And that person, power of attorney, can work with the estate lawyer in making things smoother. I'm not saying there are not going to be any bumps, making things smoother as life expectancy changes. Now, some of you are aware of RMDs. Do you know what RMDs are? Got a couple people. RMDs are required minimum distributions. And this happens when the individual turns 70 and a half. So, like my parents had some IRA stuff and they, you know, 403B or 4. Well, at 70 and a half, the government says you have to start taking the money out of those protected funds because we want our taxes now. So it's important in the legality is to find out how much legally has to come out of the RMDs as the person is aging. And the closer you get to that, you know, 90, 100, you can understand what happens to the piece of pie. They want more and more because they don't think you're going to be around as long. But RMDs are important because if you don't do the RMDs, there's a penalty for that. Which leads us to the financial care. Financial care is extremely important because if the individual has a stroke or incapacitated or has some dementia, the power of attorney can sort of stand in their place and make some great, hopefully, great financial decisions. When my mother died, it took me 6 months to find out where she had dispersed the funds because there was not a conversation with my dad. He had an idea. He could say, well, I think we got some money there. I think we got that. But my mother believed in diversification. So diversification took, you know, she believed in it to the hilt. And so it took months for me to piece all this together. And the greatest thing that can happen while the person has their mental capacities and is with it is to have a conversation with the spouse. Let's say your mother and your father are both living, they're in their 80s, and mother is just doing everything and never has the conversation with dad. Well, it's important as they're aging to have the conversation not only between the two of them, but also the power of attorney designated. It might be you, it might be somebody else. Because if they're both taken, if the Lord takes them both, then what? Then the court begins to sort out, etc. So power of attorney can enable things to happen at a quicker pace. Now, my dad has chosen for the last years, ever since my mother died, to have me power of attorney. So as power of attorney, I take care of all of his bills. I pay all the bills online. He doesn't have to write a check. He writes some checks, but he writes few checks. I know when the bills come up. I know what bills I need to make that are automatic. I just give him an idea of when they're paid. I give him a printout. I said, this is what's going on. This is what's left in your funds. Do you have any questions, etc.? So there's an ongoing communication and conversation. But as far as his responsibility of taking things out of his hands, it is. It's removed. Because I'm looking out for him to stay in his house, and I'm also looking out for his estate. So one of the things he likes about his estate is he's a tree hugger. He believes these 40 or 50-year-old trees need to be fed two or three times a year at the tune of thousands of dollars. I said, Dad, you already get the lawn care. You already get this perfect lawn. When the lawn is getting fed, the trees are going to get fed. I understand if there's a disease, but we can draw some of your funds out. He said, you don't understand, I'm a tree hugger. So what I've had to do is pull back some of the tree hugging and give him some more additional financial resources, realizing the trees sort of look just as good this year as they did 4 years ago, and a lot of it's dependent on water and nutrients. So it's very important to have this trust and ongoing that these are the funds, this is what's going on, and just have this communication. Power of attorney makes a big difference.
Breaking that down a little bit. You know, we're continuously saying POA, but the difference between health care versus general power of attorney and activation of general power of attorney, especially as a parent, is going from the point of being cognitive to being to dementia and going back and forth,
right,
and a doctor hasn't necessarily signed off, and to actually have it so that the general power of attorney is actually activated,
right,
even before that person becomes
incapacitated. Right. It's very important. So the question was the difference between power of attorney and health care, et cetera, to get these things in place and signed off before it's, like you had said, it's too late. And there's this dementia and confusion, et cetera.
Because a lot of times you go in someplace, and even with the general power of attorney, they'll ask, has it been activated?
Right.
With the general durable power of attorney.
That's the key word, durable.
That's putting somebody in place to act on your behalf.
And I'll ask.
Even before. A doctor signs off.
Right, and they will ask to see the documentation. They're gonna check, dot their I's, cross their T's. Yeah, that's a very good point. As people are aging, one of the things that obviously is going on is the grief process. You know, they miss their spouse, etc. There's this whole grief. And there was a story in Central Florida a few years ago where an elderly man was preyed upon by an individual. So he was going to, he had just lost his spouse. He's a very giving man, etc. Lost his spouse, and he was going to his car, and an individual, homeless, that's what he said at least, was following him to his car. So he said, hey, do a few dollars. He says, I haven't had a meal, you know, the typical story, right? I haven't had a meal for, you know, a couple days. Do you have a few dollars? Well, the guy didn't have a few dollars. He had his checkbook. So he wrote this in, some of you are shaking, like, so he wrote this individual a check for $20. Here, have a couple meals. 2 days later, guy shows up on the door. I'm down with the $20. Do you have any more? You know, and this individual, the senior, who, you know, wanted to help this guy, wrote him another check. He did this for 4 months to the tune of over $20,000. Nobody was watching out for his account. Just showed up. Finally, the person, a friend of his, was saying, he said, you need to go to the police. This has gone way too far. He says, well, I'm trying to help him out, but he says, I'm getting concerned. 20,000, whatever. Okay, so he went to the police. He goes to the police, and the police says, you need to stop this. So the guy showed up again at the door for another whatever handout. And the older guy says, no, I can't give you anything more. I'm done. I am done. Well, the guy was so angry, he killed him and he burned his house. I'm saying this to you because people in their emotional state, whether they're grieving or they're alone, whatever else, are preyed upon. You know what's happening even with the carjacking thing. You know, I know it's a lot of it's in the inner city, whatever. But carjacking can happen anywhere. And so you can have an older person, whatever else, that is not cognizant of walking to their car or whatever else, and somebody's following them. So the whole thing is to get them aware of their surroundings and to know what's going on and to have somebody overseeing them. And one of the things you can oversee them is the spiritual and social care. Spend some time praying and having meaningful conversations, not just about the Brewers, which, not just about the Bucks, which is, not just about the Packers and how, you know, just, but some meaningful conversations about where they are in life. It's amazing the stories that will come out. I know more about my dad now than ever because of what he's willing to share and give back to me in terms of conversation. And one of the things that you will find out, and if you haven't, is this is a very couple-oriented society, meaning my parents would go out to dinner together, meaning they would play golf or do something together, meaning somebody would invite them over to play cards together. Well, what do you think happened when my mother died to this network of together? The together was gone. Were the true friends there? Yes. But this togetherness sort of ended, and the individual was sort of left alone. Where are all those people we used to play cards with? Well, they're not there anywhere. So it's very important when it comes to the spiritual and social care. Okay, you can feed them, etc. But what kind of conversation are you having with them? Are they taken care of? Are they able to get to church? Are they in some sort of support group? My dad loves to spend time on the phone. He has more in-depth conversations with people than ever. He has a Rolodex of people that he calls on, a rotating people on basis to find out how they're doing in life. What are they struggling with? How can I pray for you? He's 90 years old. This is his new ministry. But he loves it. It's in a great, great support for him. So make sure you do that in terms of seeing that they're engaged. The final thing is taking care for yourself. You see, after all these years or whatever else, if you're doing it alone, you can get worn out. And there could come a time where you need support. Like, hey, I just want to take 2 weeks, sit on a beach and do nothing. Or, I don't want to have to worry or concern, but can somebody else step in the gap to make a difference? And sometimes it involves a neighbor. Sometimes it involves getting more siblings involved. Sometimes it involves getting the church. But I urge you to take time for yourself. It might be just a four-hour window. It might be just a day. It might be just a week. But in order for us not to get burned out, in order for us to keep being the caregivers we need to be, we also need to take time out for ourselves. Yes, they're aging. We all age. We can't deal with that. We can't stop the process. But in order for us to feel rejuvenated, socially, spiritually, financially, physically, we need to take that time for ourselves. So that's what I have to share for you, but we do have a little time for questions. Okay.
Kind of correlate what you just said, as far as if a spouse dies, and then, you know, keeping track of yourself.
So the question is, who should really step in the gap in terms of if the spouse died, if the mother dies, would it be easier for the sister to stay in?
Or the brother, or the other son?
Well, I will say this, because I have three siblings, and they're all they're sisters. All of us have a different buy-in when it comes to taking care of my dad. All of us. All of us come through a different a lens. And I ask you to, again, to think, assess the situation, you know, come up with some sort of plan, who wants to be, pray about it, and act upon it. And sometimes it might only be two siblings. There might be a couple siblings that say, you know, I'm 2,000 miles away. That's your plan. You know, that's your problem. You deal with it. I'll come once a year, whatever. You've got to make the best of whatever the situation is. And sometimes, to your comment about having the sister stand in the gap, the sister and the father, whatever else, there might be this angst, and you know it's not going to work.
I'm going one step farther. Excuse me for saying this, but how about if the sister and the father can be separated, where it's everything they do as far as a legal standpoint and everything like that is not ethical or legal, but they do it so that they come with a bond on that where it's...
Right, so the question is, what happens if the sister's in with the father and they're...
Right.
I can't speak to the premise of this whole thing that I would urge you to do when it comes to an ethical or whatever else. The thing that made the biggest difference in our family is open communication from the get-go. So when you see something and you're not living with your father or whoever else, you see something going on wrong, all the siblings get together and have a conversation before it gets to the point of, whoa, this is way out of control. You understand? And sometimes you have to back up. Sometimes you have to have what we call family meetings that make a difference. Yes, over here. All right, so the question is, how do you deal with power of attorney, et cetera, when they don't want to do deal with their with the next steps? Sometimes you have to let the... Sometimes you have to do it in pieces. So for us, we might want to, you know, like I gave you this brief talk, and you want to script the whole thing, and it's overwhelming. So maybe there's a step where you just want to talk about the healthcare issue, and you deal it in increments that they're able to understand and grasp. I know my friend of mine is dealing with his father, and his father's 94. World War II veteran, and you aren't going to get... Just happened last month, he said to his son, I'm ready. Whatever you are telling me in terms of, he says, I know I have limitations, I can't drive anymore. The whole thing was just like, so I would say to you to do things, or anybody, to do things in pieces. Pray about it, have this conversation. And a lot of times in this, you're not going to fix it because this is the way they've always done. But interject on a regular basis conversations about next steps without, you know, giving the blanket. Because when he says to you or somebody else, you worry about all that stuff when I die and take care of it. As you found out, or you will find out, you can't really take care of it all, and it goes a lot easier if these things are taken care of prior. Way in the back. And you're not living next, you're not in living in the same town or whatever. So the question is, how do you get to your parent that might be experiencing some dementia to have this conversation, to make this next step, even though you're not living in the same town, etc. Sometimes it takes, because we've always lived in the same area, but sometimes it takes people living in the close proximity. I know other people that it could be the church involvement, it could be a couple friends that they have, and the couple friends actually walk her through the process of being tested, whatever that tested might be. So it takes you as the sibling out. Well, you could say, hey, Mom, you know, would you be interested, or having, you know, two of your friends go with you? He says, I'm not there. But sometimes you need to get the network, because you're not there and you don't want something to happen to your mom. You might need to get the church or neighbors, et cetera, involved to at least support her in this, in the process. It's not an easy fix because it might need a sibling to be there with her to go through that, you know, that next step. What you don't want is for it to worsen, right? And then you know, she's in a situation where she can't help herself, etc. So sometimes you got to make those hard decisions. You just say, Mom, I'm going to show up. I've made this appointment. This is the way it's going to do. You know, I've done this with my dad. You know, I made this appointment. This is for your health. This is for the health of the family. Sometimes you need to say things where you know her health. And if she proves that she passed all these tests, like I did with my dad, remember what I said about the driver's test? Prove it to me. Let's go through this. I'm concerned about your health. I'm concerned about the health of the family. I'm concerned about the health in the neighborhood. You know, expand it so she begin to see. You might have to take more of your time to get more involved to actually go there and support in this endeavor. Yes, right here.
So I guess it kind of ties into the taking care of yourself, but what do you do when you have a parent, you know, likes to play the, you know, the wounded, you know, wounded spouse, like they want everyone to take care of them. They're not willing to get better, you know, when they're capable, and they just kind of want everyone to care for them. And you know they can do more, but they don't want to.
Right. So this goes into what I shared with you about, you know, feelings and pity and, you know, feeling sorry for themselves. One of the things that they're not getting is the support that they got before. So they are drawing, you know, pity draws within itself and it becomes this consuming thing where it just, you know, all encompassing. So I urge people to try to, when you're assessing the situation, to try to take the emotional part out of it and to really reassess their health, actually how they're doing. And sometimes all they really need is that conversation with the person. So in other words, they're aging, they're not happy about it. What can I do to make a difference? So it might be, an extra time or an extra hour you spend with them. It might be a card game. It might be time in prayer. In other words, you're not going to be able to fix their aging. You know, our Heavenly Father, with His grace and His power, can it be able to make a difference? But right now there's an angst in their life because something's missing. So sometimes the best you can do is be there and listen with them and just be their support. You're not going to fix it, but you can be supportive of them and then keep in mind objectively where are they really physically in terms of their health journey. That's a very difficult and not an easy answer to come up with. Okay, way in the back. Yeah, so the question was, or the comment was, that older people sometimes have a habit of stashing cash in all different places because of their lack of trust and et cetera. Right. So the comment was the guilt trip because they no longer can contribute or give the way they used to give. I always tell there. I'm going to leave you this website because it's helpful for those people that love to give to charities. It's called charitynavigator.org. Charitynavigator.org. If you go there, it lists most of the charities, and you will be amazed at the percentage that actually goes to the people as opposed to what is actually going to the administration. So if you can get a charity that's 85% or above that are actually helping the people, that's great. I mean, if you ever get a phone call, support our cause. But if it's reversed, which a lot of them are, oh, it's a good thing you asked that question. 15% goes to help the people, 85% goes to the administration. And, you know, people are writing checks. That's another, you know, fraud. Steve.
What about prideful? I don't need help. Yeah, I can do it myself. I deal with that daily with my father, yeah. So.
Yeah, Steve, my dad was very, very, very stubborn, probably is and still in some ways. There are some things that are taken out of our control. In other words, it might take a fall. Here's what I do with my dad. I said, well, Dad, if you fall, what are your next steps if you break your hip? And I just tell him. I tell him he needs to have a cane, etc. But I say to him, which is why I encourage you, this is what could happen with your stubbornness, and let him know. And it's out of your control. You got to pray about it. There, you know, he's lived all these years, and sometimes they just don't get it. So I have these conversations about the what if, and then you have to let it go. It's like, okay, right now it's not in my box.
What's really hard in that is a lot of times you've got to let them face the situation themselves.
Right.
You've got to let them hit the brick wall so that they realize that they do.
Same thing happened with my dad. He didn't want a bar in the bathroom because it didn't look right. Guess what's in the bathroom right now? A bar. Because the towel was not going to support his weight. So that's a good counter. Hey, thank you all for coming. God bless you in your next journey.